Hey, Luke.
So we are now recording. Give me just a minute, Christine. I'm going to mute everybody so that we can get on, and then I'll let Christine introduce our presenters.
You want to see us? And do you want us to share the screen?
Yes, you can share. Can you share screen? You yes. should have the ability to do that. Yeah. All right. Christine, are you introducing them? Or did I forget to unmute you? I'm sorry, Christine. I'm sorry. Try now.
Thank you. That is so much better. I was talking to myself. It was interesting. Okay. Hi, everybody. And thank you for coming to our presentation today. PIC Math, Industry Projects for Ownership, Engagement, and Proficiency. This afternoon, our presenters are Jennifer Travis and Vindo Chelametu. I hope I pronounced that correct. I'm trying very hard. Okay, cool. So I'm going to introduce them to you. First, Jennifer Travis is a professor of mathematics at Lone Star College, North Harris in Houston, Texas. Mentoring students on industry projects has allowed Jennifer to interact with her students on a deeper level, which she very much enjoys. She delights in seeing her PIC math students become more proficient and confident in mathematics, computing, and public speaking. She especially enjoys helping them become better writers. Vindo is an assistant professor of mathematics at Dixie State University in St. George, Utah. He received his Master's of Science degree in Applied Mathematics from Tulane University and his PhD degree in mathematics from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. During his tenure at DSU, he has mentored several students on their research projects coming directly from business, industry, and government agencies through the MAA PIC math program. He is also an EMATIC Project Access and Project Slope Fellow. Interacting with students and teaching them life skills through mathematics gives him extreme gratification. I'm going to ask that if you have questions during the presentation that you put them in the chat and we will work with them at the end of the session. And so now I turn it over to Jennifer and Vindo.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for this presentation here at the EMATIC conference. I'm here with my colleague, Vinod Chelametu. Vinod and I have had the opportunity to work with students on industry projects, and we have seen how valuable and in fact transformative these projects can be for our students. We both got started on these through the MAA PIG Math program. That's the Mathematical Association of America. Today, we want to share with you some of the computing tools and the mathematics tools that our students used in their projects. Hopefully, this will give you some ideas on how you can incorporate some more real-world math and data analysis in your classes. Also, we'll tell you a little more about PIG Math in case you're interested in becoming a part of it. So a little bit about us. I am at Lone Star College, which is a large community college in Houston. My campus is a large campus. We have a diverse student body with economic challenges. I would say that Lone Star College would be considered a pretty typical community college in terms of our students and also the programs that we offer.
Yeah, I'm working at Dixie State University, and Dixie State University is a four-year university, but it shares a lot of characteristics with community colleges. It is open access, it is associate degree granting institutions, and it has approximately around 12,000 students. And it is really committed to provide students with active emphasis on applied and career-oriented learning environment. Just to give a brief background, I did my master's and PhD in mathematics, and I have lots of experience in working in applied research projects through my graduate school work. and lots of mathematical modeling experience, working with mathematical modeling competitions with my students and all those things. And I also have quite a bit of experience in mentoring undergraduates on their research projects.
Me, on the other hand, I have not had much experience with math modeling beyond what's in our community college classes. And so that difference in our background mathematically gives us two different perspectives on working with students on these projects, and also on which aspects of these projects that we found the most challenging.
So just a little introduction on what is PICMath. PICMath stands for Preparation for Industrial Careers in Mathematical Sciences. It provides an opportunity to faculty to teach a class which prepares students for industrial careers by engaging them in real-world problems that come directly from business industries and government agencies and nonprofit organizations. The class actually provides an opportunity for students to build the skills they will need to stand out in today's job market, because it is very competent and very, very competitive to get a job right now in the job market. So it is also be a successful once they get into the first job. And if you are in a PICMath program, during a spring semester, you will teach a PICMath class in which you mentor teams of students on authentic projects from the industry partner. Actually, the MA PICMath program is funded by National Science Foundation and the National Security Agency.
So there have been five cohorts of PICMath faculty since it started in 2014. I was in the most recent cohort, so I just finished teaching the class this past spring in 2020. Vinod was in the previous cohort, so he taught the class for the first time in the spring of 2019. Out of over 180 total PICMath classes, only six have been at community colleges. Four of those were this year, including mine. So I told my students they were truly pioneers doing these sorts of projects while they were still at a community college. The PICMath organizers would really like to see more participation from community college faculty, though, so that we can open up this learning experience to a whole different set of students. Definitely visit the PICMath website for more information. There's a list of colleges that have done PICMath, and for each college, it lists one of the projects and also the industrial partner for that project that the students worked with.
So to say, why is PICMath valuable for students? Think about it. Most of the times, students were not given opportunity to work in teams coming from different disciplines or different interests. Moreover, no one is going to ask, solve a problem number five from chapter five, I'll give you $5,000. It is more like, it is a problem, go and fix it, using the knowledge you gain through your education. So that's exactly it. Actually, employers are not looking for students to solve a problem from textbook. They want graduates who can use the skills they learned in the classroom to solve the actual complex problem. This will allow students to get hands-on experience and introduce them to more career possibilities. Furthermore, it is very important because this program, this opportunity will provide them with a professional skill set essential to be successful in the first job, which includes teamwork, giving presentations, and writing skills. And for more on why PICMath program is valuable, please watch Michael Dorf on Shuzi Week's Amitic webinar from last year. And for more information on how we implemented the class at our institutions and about the logistics and rewards and challenges, watch the webinar Jennifer and I did last month for Amitic. The recordings and slides for both these webinars are on the Amitic website. For this presentation, particularly today, we will show you some of the highlights of our math students, what they did, how they used the math, and what are the computing tools they used. To briefly say what are the structure of the class, here is some information about how my class at Dixie State was set up. And actually, it was a great timing as my department is looking for more active learning courses. That is where I created this course. And one nicer thing is it is counted towards a degree plan for several STEM majors, including mathematics majors and minors. It also acted as an applied learning project class for the new degree program, Bachelor of Science in Applied and Computational Mathematics.
At my college, we offered this class through honors. It was a standalone honors seminar rather than being associated with a particular course. The students got credit for 4 hours of research toward their honors designation on their associate degree. It did not count to anybody's degree plan.
So I taught this course for past four semesters, including fall 2020, which is a weird semester for everyone else, right? That's what it is. So the spring 2019 and spring 2020 with official PicMath courses. But I'm really lucky and my university was nice. They allowed me to offer this course during the fall semester due to the opportunities it provided for the students. And I had students from almost all disciplines, which I believe it is a greatest strength of this course, because in a real life, in real world, not one person, just a math person, is solving a problem. It is a team of people from different disciplines coming together and solving the actual complex and messy problem.
So my students did not have advanced math. He had some juniors and seniors. I did not. Most of my students had never touched programming. After teaching the class, I think that the most important characteristics for being successful in it are their work ethic, attention to detail, and willing to take initiative and dive in and learn new things. Those are way more important than how much math they've had or even how much programming. My students were honor students. Some of them joined honors just to take this class because they knew it would be a valuable experience. So I had beginning students, but they were good students and they were pretty motivated. So just an overview of the problems that my students worked on first. The Houston Astros baseball team gave us a data set that had information about different fan promotions that major league teams offer at their home games. The teams will give away bobbleheads or t-shirts or whatever as the fans enter the stadium. They'll have dollar hot dogs or festivals or whatever. And the students were going to look at the connection with attendance of these promotions. The data covered all of Major League Baseball. Yeah, no snide comments about the Astros in the chat, please. Thank you. Crown Beverage Company. This is a big international company, but it turned out to be a local project. They have a plant about 30 minutes from our campus. They make aluminum cans for soda and beer and such. The plant provided us with 6 months of data about their can spoilage. The data was broken down by the different parts of the plant and the stages of the production process. So we got to learn a lot about can manufacturing, and that was really neat. I had four teams of students, and so two of teams worked on the Astros project and two of them worked on the Crown project. So I'm gonna share with you some of the computing tools my students did and a little bit of their math. And then Vinod is going to talk about some of the math that his students use for their projects. So here are what my students use for computing tools. They started out in Excel, and then we used Jupyter Notebook for all of our plots and our analysis. They did the coding in Python. I'm gonna show you an example at the end of the talk after we stop sharing the slides. They wrote all of their reports and their slides in LaTeX, and they used the Overleaf Cloud platform to compile their LaTeX code. So the data from the can company had spoilage values measured in a variety of units. So the students' first task, to use their words, was to convert everything into the most fundamental unit, the can. So several of them had never really used Excel formulas before, and so this was really good for them. Partway through the semester, inspired by knowing our students were working on this, the folks at the can company decided to do a recount on their tote sizes and figure out how many cans it took to fill it up. And it turned out it was 750 cans, which was different from the 584 cans that they told us in our database. And so my students ended up doing running a little calculation for their report that worked out how much this measurement error would have affected the how much of a percent change it would have caused to the total spoilage. Something like this would be a really good exercise for students in intermediate algebra or some kind of a quantitative reasoning class. You could give them a bunch of different data in different units and ask them to figure out how to get a total. So there was some data cleaning involved, especially for the students working on the Astros project. They also did some basic qualitative data analysis where you take the text snippets and you code them into categories. And then you refine the list of codes as you go along. And they made pivot tables to keep track of their category frequencies. So the Astros teams would take the promotion descriptions and they categorize them into jersey, t-shirt, figurine, or whatever. My other students did something similar with their production notes for the can company. They coded them into printer problems, light tester jams, and so forth. This is a screenshot of a Jupyter notebook file created by one of my students. We can show an actual file at the end after we stop sharing the slides. Colab is basically a cloud equivalent to Jupyter Notebook. You log into Google to use Colab. This tool was really great because you can organize your work linearly and you can run the code cell by cell in small snippets. And you can mix in commentary and notes with the code. So this is great for giving templates to the students and also for the students to document their own work so they can remember what they did. One of my students shared his Colab file with me a couple weeks after they turned in their final report. He cleaned it up, took out the junk, added some commentary just for my benefit. I wasn't shy about telling the students that this stuff was almost as new to me as it was to them. And so he knew I would be really glad to have his file as a resource. We all got pretty good at copying code from blog posts and pasting it into our notebooks. This Jupyter notebook worked great as a tool. I've definitely planned to use it again. So in their Jupyter notebook files, my students coded everything in Python. These are some of the packages they used. All of these packages are free and open source, as are the Anaconda, which contains the Jupyter notebook. Pandas is a package that lets you import your Excel or your CSV file into a data frame structure. And then you can slice it and dice it, and then you can make plots and do all sorts of analysis. My students ended up using Excel to do most of their slicing and subsetting of the data. That wasn't ideal, but it was our first time and it got us by. Seaborn is great for plots. I have my intro stats doing plots in Seaborn right now, probably at this very moment. The coding is simple and intuitive. And of course I provide them with example code and then they can modify my code. The Altair package makes interactive plots. At the end of the talk, once we unshare the slides, we're gonna show you a couple of interactive plots that my beginner students make. Okay, so all my students were STEM students, and for that reason, they'd never had introductory statistics. I think they were familiar with mean and median and mode, but concepts like outliers and z-score, standard deviation, those were all new to them. So here I've snagged an image from one of my students' slides. The Astros teams did some initial plots and they figured out that the game attendance was highly dependent on the home team and the day of the week. So they broke their data into groups based on team and day of the week. These were really small subsets, about 8 to 12 data points each. So we talked about how with small data sets, one outlying value can have a huge effect on the mean, but the median is more stable and more resistant to extreme values. So they used this robust Z-score calculation, which I was unfamiliar with myself, to decide which games were outliers. That X in the numerator is the median, not the mean. So the data points that had a robust Z-score of at least 2 were considered outliers. And then they looked at these highly attended outlier games to figure out what fan promotions got used in those games. So this is a heat map that my other Astros team did. They did this in Seaborn, which is one of those plotting packages. The promotion types with a lot of dark squares indicate that that promotion was associated with high attendance. Again, controlling for home team and day of the week. So this is a plot made by one of my Crown Beverage teams in Seaborn. I always call this their Mardi Gras plot. I think those are just the default colors. Here's a plot made by my other Crown Beverage team. So this one has 24 box plots, one for each hour of the day. So the 9 a.m. box plot is gonna contain camera spoilage values for 9 a.m. for the 9 a.m. hour in all the days of the data set. The students noticed some interesting trends at the time of the shift change halfway through. They went on their plots, they put both the mean and the median, and we talked about how the high-end outliers would pull the mean up. There are some really far away outliers here that are not shown because they didn't work with the scale of their plots, but they made sure to discuss and note that in their report. I don't think any of my students had seen a box plot before this class, or if they had, they had no idea what it was. By the end, they were making lots of box plots and drawing meaningful conclusions from them. So I made my students use LaTeX for their reports and their slides. I wanted them to leave the semester with some tools in their toolbox that would set them apart that other students would be unlikely to have. LaTeX can be a little intimidating when you start out. Fortunately, there is a cloud platform called Overleaf, which makes it really easy to share documents and templates. The students shared all their documents with me and with each other in Overleaf. And we all use the basic Overleaf option, which does not cost anything.
Okay, all right. For me, I would like to explain some sample projects which my students worked during the previous semesters. Moreover, I would like to give a flavor of mathematics used and how simple mathematical concepts can be used to solve complex problems. So the slide, what you're seeing right here, it's all done by my students. Any credit, all the things should go to my students. I just put just those slides because I want to make sure that the quality of the work is just exactly the same. I'm just saying that. So the first project, what we had was to predict the trail activity, the number of people, the prediction of how many people are going to be in Zion National Park. So Parks data provided a sample data set of Zion National Park entrance activity. The goal was to develop an algorithm to provide the number of hikers on specific trails based on park entrance data. This is very important because this helps the Zion National Park administration to allocate resources more effectively and improve the visitor's experience. So here is a sample data provided by the Parks data for our project, which gives us the number of hikers on the specific trail each hour. We total all the 24-hour numbers as a daily measure of activity. And then my students used a sliding window algorithm from a research paper. The algorithm is originally designed to predict weather patterns. My student took that sliding window algorithm and applied it to the visitation data. They modified the algorithm a little bit and applied it to the visitation data because if you think about it, the visitation in Zion National Park or any park is affected by weather. So they took that algorithm and applied it to the actual visitation data. And if you think about it, the behavior of tomorrow will be similar to today, just like weather pattern and the current week trend. And some week around the same time of the last year, to find the similarity, they used Euclidean distance, which we are all familiar. That's a simple concept, taking a distance between the two numbers, so between two windows. So if you look at this, if you want to predict May 14, 2019, that's what the prediction we want to make on the day. The students have access to the actual data for the previous days of 2019. And we took the 2018 data of the past 7 days of May 14th, 2018, and the next 5 days. And we got like around seven windows. We slided the seven windows out of that. And then we took a similarity of one window, which is more similar to the actual window of 2019. So once we picked the actual window of 2018, if you think about that's a green border, that's the actual similar window of 2019. Then we took the differences, and that is easy for students to do that, differences. And then we took an average of those differences of 2019, that we get 75. And for 2018, we do the same thing. We took the differences and we got the average of 83. And then we take the super average because we want to really mimic the trends of both 2018 and 2019 because that will give the better prediction. So then we got the super average and added to the previous day of May 13. And then we got the prediction for May 14. The actual May 14 is 2179. So it is 99% accurate, but you should understand it is not always gonna happen because this is just a specific day because or Saturdays, Sundays, holiday season. So those kind of things is gonna change. My students also worked on those type of models, but I'm just giving the overview of highlights of some of it. But also my students asked a question, why we need to add the 79 to the previous day? Why not we subtract it? So that's a good question. Then they looked into calculus one concept. Calculus one, we all learned slope. Slope, if it is a positive slope, it was a positive trend, then they added up 79. If it is a negative slope, then they subtracted 79. So those gives a better prediction. So they really use the simple mathematics with some sort of higher level mathematics, but this basic mathematics can really be very helpful in solving complex problems like this. So if you think about next, once we got the prediction for the daily measure of activity, then we got to make for hourly prediction. Then they took the average of the proportion of each hour of previous 31 days, and they got that average of proportion, they multiplied with the daily measure of activity to make hourly prediction. So they got that here. This is the graph my students created through the Python program. And then you can easily see the actual and the prediction of the hourly measure of activity. I know this is not that great, but think about it. It's a prediction, right? So they got approximately around 60% of accuracy, which is great. So that's what it is. So the next problem I would like to say is we got a local company here, Rolf Transmission, which was through the Redcliffe Lab, that provided us the auto transmission company customer data for years to better understand their market and customer needs. They have learned that certain leads have a much higher potential of becoming valuable paying customers based on the several data points. So what they want my students to do is they would like to capitalize on that knowledge by putting extra marketing and lead follow-up effort toward the top 20% of the prospects. To do this, they would like the students to create a filter tool based on creating an algorithm which can provide real-time probabilities of customer. For example, when a customer is coming in, you can have access to their gender, the make of the car, model of the car, mileage. This is the basic information you can ask. Based on this information, can you create a numerical algorithm which can spit a score of a numerical score like this? This is a basic formula algorithm they created. And then based on this, they got a set of low range score, medium range score, and high range score. That which says low range means low paying customer and medium low spending customer, and medium range is medium spending customer. So they got this. And then one of my students was a computer science major, and he was really addicted to web application. So you want to really do this and create a web application. You want to put this algorithm and create a front end of that. So you got that working. So another direction of this project is to maximize the project, maximize the profit. How do they do it? They can advertise it more to more people. So my students use a simple blended simplex programming method, which is a common in finite mathematics courses or advanced calculus courses. They use that. The technique is to maximize the profit based on certain constraints of geography, like for example, within 30 miles and how much budget they have, those kind of things. So what happened was they got the algorithm using a simplex method. They say, hey, you spend internet 40% of the money and 25% of the money spent on the radio, 5% bus benches, and others are like the coupons and all those things. And if they could do, the company could do this, they can actually reach to 360,000 people to advertise that, which is great. So to improve the revenue.
Okay, so this part about how we learn these tools, this is more applies to me, not really to Vinod. When Vinod started doing this, these projects, he had a lot more knowledge than I did when I started. I pretty much had to start from zero. So I guess we're an illustration that you can do this stuff regardless of your level of expertise. You just start where you are. So I went to a data science workshop put on by the MAA. Vinod attended this as well. It was way over my head, but it was also super helpful. This was in the summer of 2019, about 6 months before my class started. Before that workshop, I had never heard of Pandas or Jupyter Notebooks or Colab. So I got introduced to some tools that turned out to be really helpful. That summer and fall before my class, I incorporated some mini projects using Jupyter into my finite and my intro stats. This was really helpful. So by the time my PicMath class started, at least I had helped some students install the program and it helped them find a few errors I also set my class up in DataCamp, which is a subscription service that helps people learn how to do programming and data analysis and R and Python and a few other programs. They have a free option for educators, so it didn't cost me or my students or anything. I asked the students to do some DataCamp modules over Christmas. They mostly did, but then once the class started, we got caught up in the immediate needs and we just started looking stuff up in blog posts to figure out how to code things. I think this is a resource that I could make better use of in the future. My STEM club started trying to learn coding last year, and I wish I would have thought of using this at the time. I think it would have been a useful tool. And after I decided to make my students do their stuff in LaTeX, of course, then I had to make my syllabus and so on in my calendar in LaTeX. It took me a while, but I figured out how to do it. I also started a little side project. I edit the AMATIC newsletter. So I built a Jupyter file that does averages and total word counts and article counts per page, among other things, all coded in Python using Pandas, just like my students. This helps me figure out if we have the right amount of material, if everything will fit, or if I'll have to cut, and to figure out what will fit on each page. This has been really great to use my new skills to solve a practical problem I have had and to make me more effective at one of my roles. This newsletter thing is definitely a work in progress, but I've learned a lot by doing it. And of course, last but not least, I have learned a lot from my students. I frequently open one of their files when I can't remember how to code something. Main takeaway here is that don't let lack of knowledge hold you back or keep you from trying stuff like this with your students. If you wait until you know enough to do it, you'll never start. And so the best way to learn is to just by doing it. Vino, do you have any strategies to add?
Yeah, just like whatever you said, I agree with everything because it is all needed, right? One thing I would say is be flexible, because when we do this type of projects, we do not have a solution for it. So, and students are so creative. So always, I learned a lot from my students by doing these projects. So it's like a team. That's what I would say. So have that open to that discussions a lot through this project. So we all can learn as a team. That's what I would say. So about the challenges, I would say when you want to do this type of industrial projects, you will have students from different levels. For example, there will be one student who will be having experience multivariable calculus. Another person will have linear algebra. Other one will have a calculus two with a programming skill. So to put together a team, it's going to be a challenge, because we don't want to put all the mathematicians or all the students who are inclined to do just have interest in mathematics in one team, because that's going to spoil the team dynamics of getting a solution. So that is a challenge. And more than anything, I would say every semester I have seen at least two students coming to me after 2 weeks of into the semester saying, you know, this course is not for me. I want to drop out of it. I understand, because the normal courses is they go to lectures and they do homework problems, they take an exam, they do well, similar problems from homework problems, and then they live happy life, right? So that's what it is. So, but here it is not the case. Here, we do not have a solution. So make sure that if you are trying to do this type of things, make sure you have to get them excited and motivated enough to keep them on track.
So once the class started and all the projects were already lined up at that point, my biggest challenges were knowledge and time. Mostly for me on both of these, but I know my students had these challenges also. The other stuff, the team dynamics, were not as big for me. I had no idea what I was doing on the data analysis. That means both conceptually and mechanically. So I didn't know what sort of approach to use to model anything, and I didn't know how to code it. I knew this wasn't a lecture class and that no one had solved the problems before, and I wasn't supposed to spoon feed the solutions to any of them, but there is a limit on how far beyond their current knowledge the students can reach in a semester's time, even if they're really stretching themselves. So there were times when they could have benefited from more guidance than I had the knowledge to provide. But that's okay, they still learned a lot. Even having an instructor who didn't know much, they still learned way more than they would have learned if they hadn't done the class. So it was really worthwhile. And I'll start with much more knowledge next time I do this.
So for me, the biggest reward is students, right? Students going, I can easily see students going from consumers to producers. I clearly witnessed the growth mindset of my students. They all went through frustrating moments, no doubt in it. However, I felt they didn't go through the moments, they actually grow through the moments. So, which was great for me. And I could say this course is the epitome of active learning in my department. And it helped me help to sell in my university due to the motto they have for active learning and active life. And obviously this sets up a stage for more collaboration. And due to the success of this model, faculty within our campus looked into how to connect different projects and collaborate with different disciplines. And also the local community is contacting us and saying, hey, here is a problem we have. Do you want to take this to a classroom and work with your students? So those kind of things is actually opening up. That was a biggest reward.
So for me, the biggest reward was just seeing the students grow and learn and become the experts on their problem. Throughout the class, at least after they've been working with the data for a while and getting somewhere, they started to seem more like collaborators than students. We would wrestle with the problem together and try to think how to analyze or wrestle with some part of the paper. So it was really great to have that level of interaction with them. One big thing, and this applies to both me and my students, you have to embrace the risk of failure. I had to do it with this class and so did they. So I have realized, and I have tried to convey this to my students, that the most rewarding things are also the hardest things, and they carry a risk of failure. So if you want to grow, you have to work hard, and you also have to be willing to risk your ego. So that's something I wanted them to learn. I try my best to model it for them, and if they ever got freaked out and thought they wanted to drop, we talked about that. I was really excited I didn't lose any of them, even with all the stress of everything going virtual. And I hope someday to turn this into a long-term plus that will draw students to my campus and help them be excited about coming here, kind of like Vinod has done with his certificate program.
So the reason Jennifer and I found this class to be so rewarding is because of how rewarding it is for students, because students are everything for us, right, as a teacher. So as I previously mentioned, this has given a real sense of mathematics and why learn mathematics. Because most of the time our students say, math is boring. Hey, I don't see, hey, where do I use this mathematics? Those kind of things. So this class actually created like that barrier, they take that barrier out of their mind saying, oh yeah, I see this as some reasons why we study mathematics. So that is very important for us.
Knowing about data analysis is huge, no matter what major you're in. Computing goes hand in hand with that. All my students got better at the computer stuff. So some of them weren't even comfortable making files and folders in the beginning. They all got a lot better. One of my students got accepted to an REU. I wrote about his what he was doing on his PigMath project in the recommendation letter. I'm pretty sure it helped. So how can you use these ideas? Hopefully these gave you some ideas on how you might incorporate some authentic math into your classes. Projects are a great way to start. Small is good. We're doing something like this with a student club. If you can find a side project like I did with my newsletter, that's great. This has really helped me see how important it is for students to use math and computing everywhere and all across their disciplines. I know writing across the curriculum is an accepted thing and I'm on board with that, but I really think that we need more emphasis on math and computing across the curriculum as well. And so that's definitely something I'm going to be trying to promote. Finally, one idea is to consider teaching something like this at your class. And in that case, I would definitely recommend getting involved with PicMath if you want to do stuff like this. There's a lot of training and support there. And that's really valuable. If you do end up deciding to become a part of PigMath, this is the timeline you would be looking at. You'd apply for the program this coming spring. There'll be a workshop. It's been face-to-face in the past, but it could end up being virtual this year. And then you would teach the class the following spring. Vinod and I are both definitely willing to have one-on-one visits with anybody who wants to know more. And don't forget those two webinars about PigMath on the AMATIC website. So that is basically what we want to share. So then I think we have a couple minutes to show a couple of links, including my students' examples. And then maybe we might have time for at least a couple of questions. Vinod, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, one thing, Jennifer and I strongly believe that we as a faculty cannot get out of our comfort zone. We cannot make our students get out of our comfort zone of doing routine problems. Think about it. After graduation, our students are going to take on jobs where they exactly do things similar to pick math class activities. So why not now we give these experiences in our classes?
Okay, so so I think we're gonna have Vinod stop sharing now, and then I am going to share something if I can do it successfully.
While you're doing that, there was a question in the chat that, do you have to be an MAA member to be involved with PicMath?
I do not think that you do.
I do not think so, but thank you. Yeah, I'm not sure, but I do not think so.
Okay, it's not letting me choose an application. So I'm gonna just share this screen and hope that I can find a way to make the application work. Okay, are you guys seeing my screen? You should be seeing a browser. I can't tell if this is working.
Yeah, we're seeing something with a bunch of line numbers on it in a
awesome.
Program.
That's perfect. Okay, so this is an example of Overleaf, which is what we use to compile our LaTeX code. And here's another one. This is my syllabus. So basically, there's a preview on the right-hand panel, and then on the left-hand panel is where you type your code. There's a little chat window. That's great. So I'm going to show you some plots that my students did. So this is a plot that one of my Astro students did. Both of these plots were made by first year students who were enrolled in trigonometry at the time of the class and had never coded anything. So basically you can zoom this little scale and you can hover over any of these dots and it'll tell you more about this game. It'll tell you what kind of promotion was given away and then whatever other information the student decided to put in there. So that was pretty neat. Here's another one. So this student, she made an interactive legend. And so each of these lines represents the camera spoilage for one day of this particular month for this particular production line. And so you can click on the different dates and the line lights up. So I think my students should be really proud of these graphs that they were able to do this as a start. I think it's very motivating for students to see something like that and realize that they made it themselves. Here is just a quick example of a Jupyter notebook file. And so basically you can run each of these cells one by one and it'll work its way down. And so you can mix commentary in with the code. And so you can give them templates and so on.
And I need to interrupt you just a second. Some people are having trouble seeing your screen.
It's not showing?
Yeah.
I don't know how to fix that.
I'm seeing it. I think they need to adjust their view.
Okay.
Well, if some are, then we're just gonna go on and hopefully I'm happy to share it with anybody who needs an example later. So
okay, it was a computer problem. Was a computer problem.
So you can basically just run each of these cells, and so that's real nice because you just do it in little snippets. There's a seaborne plot, and so it makes it, I think, a very useful tool for them, for the students to use. Okay, and it'll do a faceted plots just like real easy. Let me go back to the question page. So I guess we have at least a couple of minutes for questions, right?
Yeah, there's been a couple questions. For example, how did the students code in Python if they did not have previous program experience? Were they required to learn Python?
No. So basically, I gave them a file like this. I gave them a few starter things. I told them, like, go install this program and start looking. They were a little freaked out at first, but they figured it out. So there was no prerequisite knowledge. And the students who made those graphs I had two students in the class who had touched programming before, but it wasn't Python. Those two students who did those graphs in Python, they had never coded anything before the class. So they took my example, they started looking things up. I'm sure they had their moments of freak out. they made a lot of error messages, but they got better and better at figuring it out and better at, after you work with it a while, you get better at filtering the information you find on the internet. So it's actually amazing what beginning students can do.
That's another thing I want to add is like, it's a peer pressure if you put them on the team, so they will learn.
That's true. And I think I saw a question. I didn't follow all the chat, but one popped up about the number of students on a team.
Yeah, that was the next one. Yeah.
So my teams had, I had three teams of three and one team of two.
I had like three members is a usual team size.
I think three works.
I had like four on one of the semester, which didn't work out well. So I would say the optimal size would be three.
Okay. And also, how do you deal with accessibility problems with LaTeX?
We didn't. We probably should. This was a report. It was going to the company. And so there's like, it basically generated a PDF file. And so then I guess if that was being shared with somebody who had an accessibility issue, there would need to be some way to convert it. As far as my, I guess, do you mean my students creating it? So basically it creates a PDF file and my students just did it on the web. And I was fortunate that I didn't have any of those types of challenges to overcome with this particular first set of students.
Okay. And also, back when you were talking about the park, was it a 24-hour park?
Yes, it is. It is a 24-hour park.
Okay, cool. All right. We are ending on time. Go figure. There's a bunch of links that are in the chat that have been put up. And also, please make sure that if you want to take a look at the sessions, that you take a look at the Amatic website and you can also access through myamatic.org. Okay.
I also wanted to mention that we haven't posted our slides yet, but we will. We'll send those off this afternoon, and however long it takes whoever does that to get them on the website, they'll be up. So if they're not there at this moment, but they will be there, I'm sure, very soon.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for this wonderful presentation. We really appreciate it. I hope to see everybody else all day long. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, everyone, for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.